We try to play with great pace. We try to play with great pace. Ran a lot of pick and roll, pick and pop type actions. Oh, you'll see us play. Some people look at the guy next to him and say, what the hell was that shot? Hell, I could have been Gronk before Gronk was Gronk.
Welcome back to another episode of Bangarangs and Daggers. I'm your co-host out here in the Eastern time zone, Washington, D.C., as always, Kevin Knight. And with us tonight is the three-man weave once again with Patrick and Nate. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. It's good to be back. It's good to have Nate back on here from his, you know, banishment last year.
Well, I'm glad that you guys let me come back on.
Well, you are technically a founding member of this podcast, so we had to let you back on sooner or later.
I know, and you guys are just the podcast is getting, you know, it's just expanding, and I had nothing to do with it. So,
yeah, we still have the 123 listeners we did 3 years ago when we started this.
Oh, it's okay.
Are we sure it's that many?
I have no idea.
It's a lot more than that. I know that.
I think we're in like the 300 or 400 range.
Well, that's better than when it started. So,
yeah, I think we're in the 20s.
It's truly a testament to the potential of Fred Hoiberg's squad this year.
There we go.
We all came together for Fred.
Most definitely.
Are we Fred heads or are we?
When I put it up on Twitter for voting, it came through that the people wanted Fred heads over Hoibergers. And there was one recommendation for Hoy Boys, but I think that might be a little too controversial and it kind of excludes the female fans of Fred. So Fred heads it is.
Very good.
So guys, how's this year going to be? How's Nebraska ball going to be?
That is a good question. And if anybody has the answer, then I think that they can win some serious money in Vegas.
They should be better than last year, that's for sure. Yeah, no, definitely. This is probably on paper the best basketball team I think Nebraska's ever outfitted. Just in terms of recruiting and talent and returning production, I can't imagine these guys are not going to at least compete in the Big Ten, especially considering it looks like the Big Ten might be a little down this year compared to last year, which was a boon of a year for the Big Ten. So, no, it should be a good situation for Fred Hoiberg and his crew.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the best year in terms of his tenure in Lincoln to have the best squad put together, at least on paper. I mean, the Big Ten compared to the past two seasons, which, I mean, it goes without saying for the listeners, I'm sort of the longtime Big Ten basketball watcher here. I mean,
the last two seasons. The term is Homer.
Well, I mean, you know, I obviously in the sense that the team that I am loyal to first has always been in the Big Ten since before I was born. But, you know, Homer's probably fair. But no, I mean, the past two seasons have just been an insane amount of talent and depth in the league. And this year, it's not going to be remotely close. No matter how good some of the top teams may turn out to be, the depth just is not likely to be there. And I mean, add to that, I think that we saw down the stretch last season, Hoiberg really started to show in some of the games like that, just dominating win over a decent Rutgers squad late in the year. His system's really starting to get implemented. And this season, he really has the talent and the pieces, other than maybe a question mark at point guard, which is going to be important. But beyond that, I mean, we've got the highest rated recruit in the history of Nebraska in the modern recruiting era for the asterisk there. But I mean, it's a stacked squad in terms of what he's assembled and probably one of the better Husker squads in a very, very long time. I think anybody who doesn't expect that the Huskers can make some noise and finish in the top half of the league, if everything gels well, I don't think that they're really being fair to what the potential is there. If they say that it could happen, but predict a more, you know, top of the bottom half or slightly further back, then, you know, I mean, maybe there's some fair skepticism given how the first two seasons have gone. But I mean, what do you guys think? I'm rambling on too much here and hogging the mic.
No, I would agree. I think a lot of people are kind of looking at what Fred's done so far at Nebraska, and there's not a whole lot to go off of. But if you look at the Big Ten as a whole, it's going to be, I think, fairly top heavy this year. You've got teams like Minnesota, Indiana, and Penn State breaking in new coaches. You've got Rutgers, who had a decent team the last 2 years, pretty much lose everybody. You've got Northwestern, who's not looking that great this year. You've got, let's see, Michigan State's rebuilding a little bit, right? But they've got enough talent, and they've got Izzo as coach, so they shouldn't be too big of a drop-off, honestly. The big boys are still Michigan, Ohio State. Purdue's probably going to have probably one of the best all-around years, just with the talent they have and the history they have with how they utilize their talent. They're very much a stereotypical Big Ten team. Maryland should be fairly decent, but after that, I think it's kind of up for grabs, and Nebraska is definitely in a very good position to take full advantage. You know, I'm not going to say they're going to win the conference this year at all, but they're definitely going to compete. I think they're going to pull off some upsets this year against some teams that they probably shouldn't.
Well, you guys know so much more about the program and the Big Ten than I do, but what I'm going to be extremely interested in, because like I agree with everything you guys said about the talent level, the depth, and because there have been, you know, I think in the past Hoiberg has had a nine player rotation, eight, and then I guess his best team in at Iowa State had a seven player rotation generally. Mm-hmm. I am interested in, you know, how he distributes the minutes, and I think it's probably going to be a nine, maybe even a 10, right at the beginning of the year, trying to figure things out. And then obviously I think when conference play comes around, then obviously you start buttoning things down. And so that's what I'm interested in. And like, how are you going to, and you can't, and you won't, and people are going to transfer out. But, you know, when you get the more talented players you get into a program, you know, those are players who are expecting to play, you know, unless you were up front with them in the beginning and say, hey, by the way, you know, we think that you need one or two more years, you know, of development. And so that's what I'm interested in. As far as wins and losses, I would expect, and I think we should expect, that they should win more than seven games, you know, and I think that should be a low level basement expectation. And in this era of college basketball, and in college football is becoming more like that, you know, but I think basketball, the chemistry and the trust, that matters more than it does in football, you know, and so the ability to build that chemistry and all that will be interesting to see.
No, I would have to agree with you, Nate. And I think one thing you hit on the head is, you know, you might see eight or nine or even 10 guys deep playing this year, you know, which kind of brings in perfectly tonight when we're recording this, Nebraska just got done beating the ever living heck out of Purdue State College, 97-58. Purdue, you know, came out of the gates pretty well, from my understanding. Both teams were flat. The starters for Nebraska, getting to your point, Nate, were C.J. Wilcher, Bryce McGowans, Trey McGowans, Lat Mayan, and Derek Walker. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, how many of those guys ended the night on double-digit points? None of them. Leading scorer with 20 was Alonzo Verg Jr. After him, it was Derek Walker. Derek Walker had 12 points. And then you had Keon Edwards with 12. And then Eduardo Andre with 10. Latin Mayan came in with 9. But like the starters, neither of the McGowan guys, brothers, Trey had 2 points. Bryce had 4. Not a whole lot of production out of those guys yet. Until Fred kind of figures out the chemistry, like you hit on the head, I think we're going to be seeing probably a lot like this. Again, this is the first game. It was an exhibition, getting the cobwebs out. First time, you know, I think somebody mentioned today that any of these players had played in Pinnacle in front of fans outside of, I want to say, Webster, who was at Western Illinois.
Correct.
They came and played in 2018, which is kind of a big thing. But when you remember that Fred Hoiberg only brought in 2 guys back from that 2018 team, one of them transferred and the other one graduated, you know, it's not terribly surprising. But you're going to see a lot of this rotation early on in the year, I think, until these guys kind of figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to point out about that stat too is that Trey McGowan did sit on the bench with fans. He just didn't play because he was sitting out a year because of his transfer from Pitt. Back in the era when they actually made you sit out, which they've moved past. Not to say that that's good or bad, just merely making an observation that he was there right before that happened. So he was sitting on the bench. So he was there with fans. Webster is the only player who has been on the court during a game with fans filling up PVA. Looking at the stat sheet, we got 9 guys who saw double digit minutes. And then Eduardo Andre was the next highest with 8 minutes and 30 seconds total on the game. That's a pretty wide rotation. But to be fair, it's also an exhibition against a small school. And that's the kind of thing where you just, you're sending them out to get some playing time, get some tape on them, see what they can do, see how they work together, just flesh things out outside of a scrimmage, inter-squad scrimmage for the first time on the year.
Even Fred's son, Sammy, got two minutes in. He was 0-for-1, but he got an assist and a block.
Did you guys see anyone on Twitter? Because obviously none of us had a chance to actually watch the game because we don't have BTM Plus. But did you see how many fans might have showed up or anything like that? Or
I saw a few pictures of the band, but it didn't look like a whole lot. It also doesn't help that Nebraska volleyball is currently playing Wisconsin over in Devaney Center. Yep. So that probably took a lot of people away, but I can't imagine for an exhibition there was a whole lot of people there.
I will be honest, I haven't been on Twitter at all tonight, and the only thing I know about the game is I'm looking at the box or the stat sheet here. But I can attest that the Breslin Center tonight was pretty empty. The student section was full, but I wouldn't peg it past 35-40% total between the lower and upper bowl for the general population. So if that's any indicator for people.
Yeah. No.
And I mean, they tipped off about the same time and an hour ahead. So yeah, hour further out of work for everybody.
Well, as far as, things that I noticed that kind of pop out to me is I'm a big fan of Eduardo Andre. I feel like his ceiling is NBA level ceiling, but he definitely needs development. But he, and again, it's an exhibition game. And so it's hard to, and you really shouldn't read anything into it. But the fact that, and I'm going to probably butcher, but Wilhelm Reidenbach, that he
close
played.
Enough.
that he played, almost double the, not quite double the minutes, and I guess, like we said, the man.
He had a beautiful three-pointer. He had a really beautiful three-pointer at the beginning. So, and he's 3-for-3.
Yeah, and if he can stretch the floor, that, Eduardo can do that. So, but.
And Wilhelm straight out of high school.
Yes. I mean, he was actually, he wasn't a 5-star, but he was a 4-star,
Solid 4-star.
And I'm sorry, but, I bet you, and I would probably put money on this, is that he is going to become the new fan favorite because two things. First is that he, from everything I've read, he plays really hard, particularly in practice. The second thing is he looks like a 40-year-old at a pickup basketball game at the YMCA with his glasses and his headband and his beard. And I know I'm excited to watch him play because I think he could be fun to watch.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
No, it sounds about right. I think you're right. I think he and maybe a couple other players just off the bench are going to be very, very popular. The other one I would probably say along those lines is, I'm going to butcher this name too. Guy from Japan, Keisei Tominaga.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Keisei Tominaga.
We'll figure it out by the third or fourth game, folks, I swear. But, you know, he had 13 points. He was 2 for 4 from the field, you know, shooting field goals, 2 for 4, 3 points range. Yeah, basically hit two three pointers and did well. But he also, probably a lot of you guys would remember him watching the 3-on-3 games, I should say, during the Olympics this summer. The Japanese team made it. They made it only so far. I don't think they made a medal round, but he was fun to watch during that. And he should pick up pretty quickly. And like I said, I think the fans will gravitate towards him too.
For the listeners who didn't know, some of the players, I believe, are calling Tominaga the Steph Curry of Japan, Japanese Steph Curry, because he can just shoot from anywhere and he can get a shot off. So that's a good another nomination for future fan favorite. So I'd be surprised how much, particularly in conference play, how much playing time he gets, because I guess we'll see if he can play defense or not, because that will probably be a determining factor.
Doc won't let him sleep. What do you guys think? How do you guys think the conference is going to end up this year?
That's a Kevin question, I'd say.
That is a good question and also a tough one. I mean, in the sense that Iowa still will not know how to play defense, but they won't have a I'm trying to trash talk them and I'm blanking on his name. And it was actually a player that I liked. Their wing left for the NBA.
I can't think of his name either.
Yeah. So anyway, he's gone. And obviously Luka Garza is both to the NBA. Garza got drafted by the Pistons too, which was hilarious. Mm-hmm. I guess I have to root for him now. But Iowa's going to be down. They're not going to be out. They've still got some talent, but they're down. Illinois still has Kofi Coburn back, but I mean, one of his strengths was having All-American point guard Ayo Dosunmu to dish in the ball. I mean, they were one of the best pick and roll duos in the country last season, so he's gone.
Back to Iowa. Were you thinking of Joe Weiskamp?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I actually liked Wieskamp. He's gone. You already hit on the nail on the head. Minnesota, Penn State, and maybe to a lesser degree, Indiana are all going to be in rebuild mode this year. Maybe Northwestern even more so, because their best player, Miller Kopp, left for, I believe, Indiana, hilariously. Let's see, Ohio State. Probably going to be a middling Big Ten without the expectations of being a top Big Ten team, like they've always seemed to finish under Chris Holtmann, but with a lot of hype that never pans out. Maryland, Rutgers, tough, scrappy team without some of the talent that they had. I mean, it's just a into running down the list of teams. It's pretty much going to be Michigan and Purdue and everybody else, I feel like. It will be interesting to see what Wisconsin's like coming out of the locker room with all of their secret recordings and not sticking up for, basically assaulter Brad Davison, who loves to, you know, give a little love tap to opponents sometimes and has a history of being a dirty player. So no wonder refs officiate it as such. I think that's probably enough of me on the Big Ten, right? Is that a good picture? Bunch of middle teams, those three teams that we already mentioned, Minnesota, Penn State, Northwestern, all bottom of the league, Indiana clawing its way out of that maybe. And
No, it sounds good. What are your thoughts on Maryland? Did you mention Maryland?
Yeah, so I they're another team that I think has some talent, but really doesn't have anything that's going to get them out of, I'm going to trademark this now, the mushy middle. They lost Ayala, I believe, who was their key guy last year. I'm pretty sure he left for the NBA. He came back.
You're thinking of Aaron Wiggins.
Yeah, Wiggins left. Ayala came back. He was kind of their key guy, I think, Aaron, frankly. Yeah.
Senior this year.
Yeah, so he, with him back, maybe peg them more like a fifth place team, maybe if Turgeon doesn't coach games away when it's on the line, because he's still a terrible in-game coach. Probably around there, fifth, sixth, seventh place, somewhere in there, I think, for the Terps.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you that like maybe the top two or three are probably going to be fairly solid. I'd throw Ohio State in there. I still think they're going to be contending for the top of the conference this year. But yeah, mushy middle is probably the best way to describe how the middle is going to be. But I for once, there will be a bunch of bottom feeders, but I think for once that Nebraska is not going to be in it. I think they're going to fight somewhere in the middle for the mushiness of the conference. I think if anything, by the end of the season, the nice thing about Nebraska's schedule is that it is kind of front loaded in terms of the conference slate. They've got a bunch of tough teams at the beginning of the season, but the last 10 games, I want to say there's probably only maybe two or three that'll be losses, and the rest, I think if Nebraska plays up to where they should be, they should end the year fairly well and have a good placement in the conference tournament. That should put them in position for some sort of entry in the NCAA, hopefully. If not, they'll probably make the NIT. Again, there's going to be growing pains this year. I think people are going to forget that. And like Nate said at the beginning, finding the gel, the rhythm, the flow of how this team's going to work, it's going to take a few games, and it might take longer than we expect. So,
I think they should be 7-0 going into the Big Ten ACC Challenge. I mean, it's just a bunch of cupcakes, a bunch of losers.
That actually was going to be my question for you, Nate, before we wrapped up. I was going to try to squeeze in. You had said you think that they're going to get set more than 7 wins. And I was going to ask, more than 7 wins in conference play or on the season total? Well, so I feel like that answers it. More than 7 wins in conference, right?
Yeah. That's a good question. I just know I'm just throwing shade at Creighton. So I was just
Creighton's going to be down a little bit this year. I'm not going to lie. They're still a good team, but they're not going to be like they were last year.
Yeah. Well, they're not ranked in the coaches' preseason poll. That's for sure.
They got 7 votes, I think.
Yeah, they were towards the bottom of those receiving votes.
Yeah. So at least they received something. Jays. I think they're projected for 8th in the Big East this year.
Oh.
So that takes them down quite a few notches from the last couple of years they've been. So, but you know what? NC State should be decent. They got to play Auburn in one of those Hoop Classics. Auburn should be a good team. It's Bruce Pearl, whether you like him or not. He is a good coach. You know, but outside of that, most of those games are fairly winnable. So,
how many points do they beat Kansas State by? Because obviously that one's not going to be a loss.
Oh,
hopefully not.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them 15 on Kansas State. I'll probably eat my words, but yeah.
Well, I think it should be a fun season. I mean, I think we should have.
Wait. Before we move on from Kansas State, though, I also have to add over under on Kansas State starting a brawl. If somebody, you know, draw mouse off and makes jokes about Kansas being a better program.
Oh, I'm gonna do the under on that. Nobody in Nebraska cares.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't get the reference, for our listeners, Kansas and Kansas State got into a brawl during their game going on two seasons ago, I believe it was.
I'm pretty sure
there were still fans.
2019.
There. Yeah, so that's obviously what I'm making light of, like I like to do with my unique pointed references.
Good job. All right, guys, I got to get going. Thanks for everybody. Thanks for coming on board. Thanks for everybody listening. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
I'm good.
I hope Nebraska creams Michigan this year for a change because it's long past due.
Heck yeah.
Down with Juwan Howard.
Most definitely.
All right. Thanks for listening. We love you.
Bye.